welcome to another episode of the Extraordinary Moms Podcast. I'm Jessica Dahlquist, your host, and every Tuesday I interview a different mom who shares their motherhood journey and the lessons they've learned along the way. If I've learned anything from interviewing such a wide range of moms, it's that no two extraordinary moms look the same. We all have a story to tell, and we are all mothering in our own way. So let's celebrate that and learn from one another. Thanks for listening, and if you like what you hear, please share the show with a friend. If you haven't already done so, it would mean so much to me if you would leave a rating or review on iTunes. That way it helps more people to be able to find the podcast and share these amazing stories of these extraordinary moms. I'm also always looking for new guests for the show, so if you know of an extraordinary mom or if you yourself have an extraordinary story, email me at jessica@extraordinarypodcast.com. And that way I'll be able to learn about new moms out there that I may not know personally, but that have extraordinary stories. So thanks for doing that. On today's episode, I'm going to talk with Katie Crenshaw, who's going to discuss redefining beauty. When her daughter was born with a birthmark on her face called a capillary hemangioma, she really evaluated, okay, how am I going to teach her to be confident in herself? And how am I going to deal with strangers? And it's a really important topic. I think we all strive to want to not only feel good about ourselves, but to be able to teach our children to have confidence in the way that they look. And Katie's message is one that is so encouraging and inspiring. I know you're going to love my conversation with Katie today. So let's get to it. Welcome to the show, Katie Crenshaw, today. Hi, Katie.
Hi.
How's it going?
It's really good. How are you, Jessica?
Good, good. Where am I talking to you from today?
I'm in near Atlanta, Georgia.
Cool.
In the metro area.
Awesome. That's great. Well, you and I, this is our first time talking and we've never met, but I found you on social media and just really love this message of positivity and redefining beauty that you're putting out into the world. And it has to do with your journey as a mom and a condition that your daughter has. But so we're going to get more into that later, but why don't you give the friends listening who may not know you a little background on yourself, Katie?
Okay, so I'm, like I said, I'm near Atlanta, and I have two children, a son who is 6, going into first grade, and then I have a daughter who is 11 months now, and she was born last August, so quite the age difference, and which definitely keeps me on my toes.
Yeah.
I have an amazing husband who is super dad, and I also started blogging right after my daughter was born last year, so my plate is relatively full.
That's so fun. And then previously you were a labor and delivery nurse, right?
I was a medical assistant, yes, and okay. I worked in labor and delivery, postpartum, nursery.
What did you love most about that kind of work?
Just being with women in their most vulnerable / strongest moments of their lives. No one understands a woman like another woman, in my opinion.
Yes.
And so I just really love being able to connect with women at that juncture. And then from a career standpoint and a medical professional standpoint, I love the high pressure and the excitement of that area without being the emergency room or something like that. So.
Right. Yeah. It's not all on your shoulders, but you can at least be a part of helping those kinds of critical situations.
Yes.
Well, I mean, good medical professionals are so important, especially in really vulnerable situations like that. I've been so thankful for great assistants during my labors that were, and I wasn't always like very nice because I mean, I'm tired, I'm in pain,
right?
I'm not at my best. So I always feel bad for those people, but
no, that's what we're there for.
Yeah. That makes me feel better. That's awesome. Well, let's talk more about your motherhood. Let's go back to the time that you became a mom. Grayson is your first son. Tell me about those early days of motherhood with him. What do you remember about the best parts and the hardest parts and things like that?
From what I remember, which is basically nothing of the
Isn't that weird? It's like a fog, like never happened. Yeah.
Yeah. I remember there being a lot of confusion and paranoia.
Yeah.
I was reading like 10 books a day and like analyzing every rash and noise, and I was a lot more stressed out with him. So
yeah.
I definitely remember just being totally confused and lost and thinking that no one ever told us how hard it would be.
Yeah. And so how is that different from when you had Charlie 5 years later How are you different as a mom then with her newborn days and months?
Well, the irony is she is a lot. She it was and is a lot more difficult of a baby. So now that I'm relaxed and I was like, oh, when this baby's born, I'm just going to put them in their swing and then I'm going to like do housework while they sleep instead of watching them to make sure they're breathing.
Right.
But then Charlie like didn't ever sleep ever and still doesn't. And so then it was like, well, never mind. But with Charlie, I'm just a lot more laid back and, you know, I'm not stressing about every little thing. And I think I've got a good grasp on the fact that we are, you know, every mom is different and there's no rule book for all of us. So I just feel a lot more confident this time.
Yeah, I totally agree. When you can change those expectations, even if you have a harder baby, it's not going to rock your world quite in that same way where you feel like if you feel like there's the potential for being able to be the perfect mom and figure everything out, like you're always going to fall short of that. But if you realize like no one is capable of that and every child is so different and it's not you, it's just you trying to figure out this little being who has needs and comes wired a certain way.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's hard to come to terms with though. So let's talk more about your sweet little girl, Charlie, who is just darling. And she is what caught my eye on Instagram. So tell me about Charlie and the condition that she has.
Charlie was born with a capillary hemangioma, and that's essentially a strawberry, what people call a strawberry birthmark. Mm-hmm. But we're used to them looking more like little small spots on babies.
Yeah.
We actually didn't know what it was at first. The pediatrician on call thought it was a port wine stain, and then her pediatrician a few days later, a different doctor, also thought it was a port wine stain and referred us to an ophthalmologist, who also thought it was a port wine stain.
Wow.
So it was misdiagnosed 3 times. And just being in healthcare and, I guess, maternal instincts, I just didn't feel like that was correct. And it started to puff up a little bit. And I knew that port wine stains stay flat.
Yeah.
So I kind of pushed. I have a friend who's an OB, and she was able to refer me to another ophthalmologist, a pediatric ophthalmologist, who said this isn't a port wine stain at all. This is a capillary hemangioma, and she needs treatment. So once we figured out what it was kind of scary and overwhelming, because while I knew she was being misdiagnosed, I wasn't aware that it had other connotations associated with it. So I didn't know that we were going to have to do all this diagnostic stuff.
Was it while you were trying to get the correct diagnosis, was it progressing and getting worse?
Yes, it hugely progressed from
scary.
That's why I knew something. It wasn't what they said,
right?
But from birth, at birth, it was just It looks like she might have just been maybe bruised coming out,
right.
Or like, I mean, it was just a very faint pink mark, and then from then to 2 weeks, it was a major difference. When she was 2 weeks old, it was like a bright red purple tumor looking thing on her face.
Yeah, that must have been so scary, not having those answers, but seeing it getting worse and like being helpless about knowing what to do about it and wondering like, well, what could this mean for her?
Right, exactly. Yeah.
So once it was correctly diagnosed, then what was the prognosis and the treatment and...
So what they do for a segmental hemangioma like hers, which means it's over a certain size, it's a large portion of a baby's whatever part of the body they're on.
Yes, this is her cheek.
Yeah, mm-hmm. If it's over a certain size and it's on their face, especially, the protocol is to do a full workup to make sure that that it's not a marker for a syndrome. That could be, you know, more harmful to her health.
Yeah.
So they recommended that we get an MRI and then go. She was only 6 weeks old, so they wanted her to obviously be admitted for that because she would have to be under general anesthesia. And then they would start her on the medication that they give to babies to keep the hemangioma at bay so it didn't block her vision or anything.
Okay.
So we were admitted to the hospital for 3 days, and she had an MRI, other diagnostic tests, echocardiogram, things like that. And then they started her on the medication under their observation so they could make sure there weren't any side effects. And then
they, of course, they ruled out anything else that could be wrong, which was great.
It
it's nice to have the MRI because you can see kind of where it goes under the skin, but hers had not affected her brain or her airways or anything like that.
But so, they can sometimes?
They can.
Okay, what a relief.
Yeah, they definitely can, which is why they started doing the MRI right. and not just brushing them off, because it's kind of like the tip of the iceberg. You're not really sure where it goes.
I see.
Yeah.
Wow, well, that must have been a relief to realize that it wasn't, at least eminently, impacting anything else, and it was mostly just cosmetic. So how long did it continue to grow or get worse, for lack of a better term? And has it stabilized? And what have you noticed with that progression?
So the thing about hemangiomas is that they all go through, infantile hemangiomas all go through three phases. The first one is proliferation, where they grow rapidly, and then they kind of plateau and stay the same, mm-hmm. and then they start to involute. And this is without medication, they do this.
Okay.
So even if she had never been medicated, it would eventually go away on its own.
Wow.
But the timeline is different for every kid. So the reason she had to get on the medication was because of where it is. They didn't want to block her vision.
Right.
You know, make her muscles for her eye weak, things like that. So she was on the medication. I could tell the medication definitely was keeping it from getting any bigger. It stayed the same. Mm-hmm. And then there were days where it looked maybe lighter. And then when she was 6 months old-ish, she got sick. And when they're sick, you're supposed to hold the medication if they're not eating as much, because it could just, cause some blood sugar issues. Oh. So we held the medicine, and when we held it, I realized that it was not growing anymore on its own.
Hmm.
And previously, if she had missed a dose, I mean, you could tell, because if she missed a dose, within 12 hours, it was puffed back out.
Wow.
So, yeah, so when she stopped the medication, I realized it wasn't growing anymore, and there was no more threat to her vision. So we stopped it, and that was at about 6 months, and she's 11 months now, and the it's already started to involute on its own.
Wow.
So the difference from 6 months to now is tremendous. Even my followers are like, I can't believe the difference over
really?
The last few months. And she has not been on medication, so it's just involuting on its own like they do.
Yeah.
So
that's amazing that the body can I know that you've been on medicine and everything, but like the body can heal itself like that, and there can be that deprogression the other way. I mean, that's just remarkable to
me. It really is.
That is amazing. So, I mean, looking at your little girl, I mean, obviously she's your little, precious, perfect little girl, and that's what you hope everyone else sees as well. But, I mean, obviously, you know, there's going to be questions and stares and everything, especially since it's on the face. How does that feel as a mom? And how have you kind of evolved in that?
Well, before we had answers, it was extremely stressful because we didn't have anything to say
right.
yet.
Yeah, right.
So before we knew anything, family and friends obviously were mostly around her and were just like, what is that? What's going on? Is she going to be okay? And it was like, we don't know. Like,
right.
leave us
Give
alone.
Give us some time.
And then,
yeah.
And then once we found out that she was fine and her health was not affected, and, you know, she was going to be fine. It was more or less a cosmetic issue that we were going to have to deal with. Then it became more like, okay, like, let's move on. Like, we were all worried
right.
that something could be affecting her health, but it isn't. So we moved on from that as her parents. And so then people would, you know, continuously, it seemed like every time someone saw her, that was the first thing they said.
Right.
It was never anything else other than, oh, well, that's gotten bigger, or that's gotten smaller, or look at that, or, or they would say things like, oh, I'm so sorry, oh, so terrible, it's poor child, and, you know, it was just like, oh, my gosh, like, can we talk
right.
about something else?
Right.
So it was really frustrating.
Yeah.
In the beginning, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. I can only imagine. What do you want people to know about your daughter and her condition?
I don't want people to automatically assume that she's going to have a rough life and struggle just because of that. She might, but she might not. You know, my son might struggle because he has blonde hair, and some kid might make fun of that because
right.
they want to. I mean, you know, you just don't know.
Yeah, we all have things that we can lead to insecurities down the road, whether it's physical or mental or, you know, educational. I mean, everybody has something. And
yeah,
and for sure, we've all been out in the grocery store with our children. And if there's a child that looks differently or is acting differently than what we might assume is typical, you know, that's when they start to say, like, what's wrong with them? Or, mommy, look at that child or whatever. What's the best way I can handle that with my kids in that type of situation where they're just curious?
I had a lot of success. Actually, I've had great experiences with kids and moms.
Yeah.
Because obviously I've had that happen a lot. You know, kids ask their mom really, you know, right next to us, what is that on her face?
Right.
Because they're concerned. Obviously, children don't know what it is. So
and they're not trying to injury. Be mean.
No way.
They're just they're curious.
I mean, mm-hmm. Yeah. And they, you know, they don't know anything other than bumps and bruises. So they think she's hurt.
Right.
And, their moms, almost always moms have great answers when they say, you know, it's a birthmark. She was born with it. And that's just a part of her skin. That's a different color than the other part of her skin. And that's all. She's fine. Like, you know, she's not sick. It's just her part of her skin is a different color.
Right.
And they understand that really easily.
Yeah, and I think that kids probably have a better time accepting it than adults do, probably, right?
Oh, yeah, because they're so untarnished.
Yeah.
They're fine.
We could learn a lot from our kids in that respect. And
absolutely.
I think that the genuine, curious questions, they're entitled to have. But it's our job to give them an answer that will make sense to them. We all look different. And she's not hurt. She's okay. And she still wants to be your friend. Let's go play, you know, move along.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I think that's so important. So you've been really passionate about wanting to educate the world about changing the definition of beauty. And what do you want to teach your daughter specifically about beauty? And what would you like to tell the listeners and the world about, you know, how you've evolved in this, in your definition of beauty?
Well, it's been life-changing for me to have a girl in general. I was a boy mom until now.
Yeah.
as a girl who only had brothers, you know, you know, we know the demands of our society for us as women are so high, and the bar is, I mean, it's ridiculous what's expected of us in general and what's expected of us for our appearance and for our careers and as moms. I mean, it's just too much. And there's so much we already have to try to control, I guess. And having Charlie, number one, made me realize that I need to care about myself more and I need to see myself as beautiful because she's going to be a direct reflection of how I behave.
Absolutely.
And I have to be done calling myself fat and I have to be done, you know, feeling like I can't leave the house without makeup. And I have to change that about myself first. And then with her, I don't want her to ever feel like it's something she has to hide or she has to turn a certain way for a photo or, you know, I want her to grow up with parents who didn't make a big deal about it.
Yeah,
and didn't
right.
project some kind of negativity onto her. I think that it will 100% be in how we handle it. And that's kind of affirmed for me by hundreds of emails I've received from all over the world of people, either children who had hemangiomas who are now adults or any birthmark on their face, and parents of children with birthmarks, and just amazing, supportive in 20 different languages, literally.
Wow.
People saying, like, either you inspired me to post pictures of my child because I wasn't, because I didn't want to get the comments, but now I'm going to because who cares? They're beautiful.
Yeah.
To adults sending me pictures from their childhood saying, this is what I looked like, and I grew up with a beautiful, confident life, and it's because of the way my parents handled it. So, you know, there were definitely trolls, and there were definitely people who said that I was a terrible mom, and I'm exploiting my child, and whatever. But it was so overwhelmed with the positivity of people who had experienced it and said, you're doing the right thing. You know, I'm who I am because of my parents. Like, this did not define me. I did not have a hard life, you know?
Yeah.
And so it's been really great to know that there's kind of a huge invisible support network out there.
Yeah. And inevitably, when you put yourself out there on social media or on a blog or anything, you're going to get negative comments. But for the sake of the people that need to hear your story, that need to see pictures of a beautiful little girl who has parents that view her as beautiful, and for the sake of all those people that might be holed up in their house, like you in the very beginning, not wanting to go out just for not wanting to have those conversations, to say you can step out. You're entitled to live your life.
Yeah, I was so excited to have a baby girl and dress her up. Yeah. And, you know, I'm a photographer and post pictures of her just like I did Grayson. And it was like, I'm still going to do this. Like, this is still who I am. Still what I want to do. So.
Absolutely. Well, I know that there are listeners who maybe are facing a similar situation where they are kind of not wanting to go out in public because maybe there's something physically about their child that draws attention. Maybe their child's behavior, you know, is kind of sporadic and might draw some onlookers. What advice would you give someone that's struggling with, you know, being out in public and that potentially could draw criticism or comments?
Sure. I guess I would say don't let the opinions of others influence how you're mothering. It's really easy. It's so easy to absorb reactions and absorb what people are thinking about you, and it alter. I mean, there's been times when I knew my son was okay and he was justified in acting out, but I felt the pressure of people staring at me,
right?
And I felt like I needed to discipline him, you know. And it's so easy to just feel like everybody's watching you and everybody's expecting you to behave a certain way.
Yes.
And I would encourage people to, or moms and dads, to ignore it. Just have on blinders. Like, what you project to your child is going to be what they absorb. And, you know, when people say things in front of her, it doesn't change my face. It doesn't change my attitude. I stay positive. I stay happy. And I redirect. I don't, you know, whether it's an autistic child or a wheelchair-bound child.
Right.
It's fine. Like, you're their mom. You're who they're going to look to for support. Stay positive, because you don't have to make it negative because everybody expects you to.
Absolutely. And if you're inclined to stay home and kind of hunker down and not want to put yourself in social situations, ultimately that's the kind of life that your child's going to adopt. If they feel like there's some shame or stigma around whatever it is about them that's keeping them from going out in public confidently, that's how they're going to grow up. And so by being bold and confident and positive, that is exactly the attitude that they're going to have their whole life.
Exactly. You I can't, love that. You, and it was really surprising to me, actually, how many moms that I already had known for several years messaged me and said, like, oh my gosh, you wouldn't know this, but my child has a hemangioma on her shoulder, and we don't put her in a bathing suit, and now we're going to. But, like, I've known these people for years, and I had no idea. And I'm like, I didn't even know that, because so many people – you know, it wasn't that long ago that the generation ahead of us kind of hid things like that.
Right.
And, you know, it was common to not bring those things out into the open. So I think the more we kind of normalize that stuff and don't hide it and don't make it a big deal, that hopefully by the time Charlie's an adult, the world will have a little more open mind about unique features being just a part of what makes someone beautiful as an individual.
Yeah. Oh, that's a great answer. That is so great. Yeah. We're raising this next generation, and we are teaching them kind of how to think and feel. And yeah, the more we can communicate that level of acceptance and love and respect for all people, that is, that's how it's going to be. That's going to be the new normal. And I am really optimistic about that.
I am too. I really am.
That's wonderful. Wow, I love your story. I love your mission, and I think it's so important to just ponder, what do we view as beautiful, and how are we talking about ourselves in front of our kids? Because that is the message that they are going to be internalizing. What's next for you, Katie? What's next for you and your family and everything?
Well, we are... So Charlie, like, she's in the newborn stage.
Yeah.
She never sleeps.
It's so hard.
So I basically, still momming really hard, and I'm blogging. My blog has been really successful, and I am excited because I love to do that. And it's a great way to work from home doing what I love. And You know, school just got out today, so Ooh. We're looking forward to just a great summer together. And I'm personally just trying to manage it all at one time, like all the other moms out there.
That's awesome. That sounds like a great year ahead. All right, Katie, I always ask my guests one final question, and it's this. What would you tell your pre-motherhood self?
I guess I would tell myself that there aren't rules, and just motherhood isn't one size fits all. I learned after my first one that education is important, but I threw out all the books eventually mm-hmm. and stopped Googling things and stopped reading what everyone else was doing because it just sets us up for failure. So I feel like every mother has to learn what works for them and what works for their children in their home. And you honestly can't do the comparison game and think that everything is going to apply to all the children and there's one right way to parent. So I would say throw it all out, just figure out what works for you and your kids and go with it because that's what's going to make everybody the happiest.
Yeah, I totally agree. And especially for parents that have more than one child, you see how differently they come to this earth. Yeah. And it's like, you're the same mom and you're probably parenting very similarly from the previous child. And what works with one child is not going to work with another. So it's definitely going to not work from one family to the next, just perfectly cookie cutter, you know?
Exactly.
So we put way too much pressure on ourselves though, to do it just like another mom we might, you know, be inspired right. by.
And then we wonder why it's not working.
Yeah, I think, yeah, so. Give yourself some grace with that, right?
Right, exactly.
That's a great answer. Well, Katie, thank you so much for sharing your story. So, Katie, where can people find you online if they want to find more information on your family?
I blog at 12 and 6 blog, which is 12and6.com spelled out. Or I'm on Instagram at Katie M. Crenshaw.
Perfect. Awesome. Well, thank you so much for sharing your story. And it was just so encouraging and so fun to get to know you today.
Thank you so much for having me, Jessica.
Have a great summer.
Thank you. You too.
Bye.
Bye.
I really enjoyed this conversation with Katie and hearing what she had to say about how she handles the comments in public. And we've all been there, regardless of whether your child has something physically different about them or behaviorally or whatever. Even typical children are going to have their moments in public that are going to draw some onlookers, right? We've all been there in the grocery store. We've all dragged that kid out of Target. I mean, come on, let's get real. We've all been there. And so I loved her point about just parenting your children how you know is best for them and not worrying about what other people think, not worrying about what they say or what they might be thinking. But the most important thing is that you are the parent and you know your kids the best. And it's up to you to make those decisions to parent them in the best way that you think is for them. So I like that. It's hard sometimes to not worry about what other people think, but when we can do that more often than not, we're going to feel much better about the job we're doing as a mom on any given day. So like we mentioned in the episode, Katie is a blogger, and you can find out more about her and her family on the blog 12and6.com, and that's spelling out the words 12and6.com. And you can also follow her on Instagram. All those links will be on the show notes at extraordinarymomspodcast.com. You can follow me on Instagram at jessicadahlquist3. And I hope today's conversation just really got you thinking about how you view yourself, how you talk about yourself in front of your children, or even just in your own head, and just appreciating the beauty that you have and that your children have, and helping our children to recognize that we are all created differently. And there is no set definition for what beautiful is. We're all created beautiful, we're all unique, and that should be celebrated. So I encourage you to talk with your children about accepting other kids on the playground and in their classes and befriending all children, because all children need a friend and they want to be respected and loved and they just want to play on the playground regardless. So have a wonderful day. Thanks so much for tuning in to the Extraordinary Moms podcast, and I'll see you on Friday.